I'm Robin. I'm the pastor here at Eastlake Church. Welcome. We started this church so there'd be a place where everyone could have a relationship with Jesus, could find Jesus and follow Jesus. Doesn't matter what kind of background you come from, maybe religious, maybe not. Doesn't matter how you arrived today. You might feel really good about yourself today, and maybe you don't. Maybe you had something disappointing happen this week. Maybe you have some regret that happened this week, and you're not feeling all that great about who you are this week. That doesn't matter either. Jesus wants to have a relationship with you because he loves you. It's not on the basis of how good or bad you are. It's on the basis of love. He loves you. Every time we gather, the reason we sing songs and we go into the Bible is so he has a chance to tell you today that he loves you. The whole church is founded on that. Now, we're in this series called The Life of David, and last week it was all about David and Goliath, how this teenager with a slingshot had enough faith to believe that he could kill the giant. We all have giants in our lives, things that we want to see happen, but there's some kind of a giant in the way. And David had a faith because he was close to God. Now, faith is not a muscle that you build. It's not some sort of an attitude that you get. It comes out of the closeness in my relationship with Jesus. The closer I am to someone, the more faith I have in them. And when you're close to God, you have a lot of faith in God. It's not a religious word. It's a relationship word. When I'm close to God, I have faith in God. Here's the definition of faith. I believe God can do anything, regardless of my circumstances. And when I'm close to God, I believe he can do anything. What giant do you have in your life? And it just seems so huge. I'm close to Jesus. David, very close to God, and so he's able to kill the giant. Now, today we're going to look at a story that's just the opposite. It comes from a time in David's life. Maybe you've heard about it. It's the story of David and Bathsheba. And it's at a time in his life when David has almost no faith, because he isn't close to God. He's faded away in his relationship. Any relationship that I have, I can start to fade away. When is the last time you just thought to yourself, how did we get here? How did I get here? How did I get so far away? It begins with a fade. Last week, David close to God. This week, not so close. Look in your note. It's the big idea this week. When you fade, it can lead you far away. It's the story of David and Bathsheba. So here we go, we'll read it. In the spring, at the time when kings go off to war, so circle that, that's the context, it's springtime, and David's a king. David sent Joab, he's the general, out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem. You know, when you fade and you fade and you fade, sometimes you don't know how far away you are. And David's faded quite a ways. He's supposed to be acting like a king, but he's not acting like a king. He's supposed to be going off to war. It's time to go to work, and David wants a vacation. It's time for action, and he justifies taking a break. And that's how you fade, is sort of like one justification at a time. The summer is you have to watch it in the summertime, because in summertime you can kind of fade in your relationship with Jesus. You can fade in your commitments because you've been penned up all winter long. It's like, I got to get out there, and you recreate and camping, and there's all kinds of sorts of things to do. And sometimes you don't realize how far you fade in things until it's time to do something different, and then all of a sudden you're not who you used to be. Because when you fade and you're far away, you can find out, I'm not the person that I thought I was. David, he's not acting like a king. He's not how he's supposed to be. And he's not where he's supposed to be. He's not acting how he's supposed to be. He's not doing what he's supposed to do. And when you fade, all of a sudden Dave finds out, I'm nowhere near the person I used to be. I started exercising 7 years ago. I just started picking up weight, and I got a bad physical, or my cholesterol was high. I don't know if this ever happens to you, but you try a shirt on, you think, gosh, my wife shrunk this shirt. You know, you throw it aside, and you go in, you get another shirt, and you put that on. She shrank the whole thing, you know, and you start realizing, oh, she didn't shrink anything. I'm getting bigger, you know, and so that started happening to me. So I'm going to exercise, right? So I decide I'm going to run. I take CrossFit. I'm pretty consistent. I'm very, like, I get into it, and years go by, and for weeks and weeks and weeks, I never missed a week where I didn't exercise. 2, 3, sometimes 4 a week, I run, I do CrossFit. Just for 7 years straight, I am on it. It was great. I felt great. I could eat whatever I want. And then this winter came. And it's a hard winter. There's lots of super snow. And so I start to justify it. It's cold outside. Dude, I don't want to run. And then I had an eye surgery. And that made it really hard to run because I was able to connect the eye to the foot and go, well, the feet aren't working as well. And then I had a toothache. And it was all these different things. And I just started to justify not exercising just a little bit, just a little justifying. And pretty soon I'm just kind of doing it twice a week. And I'm just fading a little bit. Here's the problem with the fade. It's so gradual. You don't realize you're sort of fading away. And then it's once a week. And then I remember the very first week I didn't exercise at all. 7 years I had never missed a week. I was like, oh God, I'm freaking out. So I go back the next week and I exercise 3 times. And then I'm like, oh, I'm sore now. So then the next week I didn't exercise again. And a month went by. I didn't exercise 1 time. So I go out this last week. I'm like, oh man, you know, I got to get back at it. So I ran twice this week. And the second time that I ran, I came back and I thought I needed an oxygen. I thought I got to get some oxygen tank for this thing. I was dying. And it's the same exact run that I've always done. But I faded. I'm not the same person I used to be. And David's not acting like a king. I walked into the house and my wife said, what's with you? I was pouring sweat. And Clarice says, I've never seen you sweat like that. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm not the same person I used to be. I have faded. I'm a different person now. I'm not where I used to be, and I'm not acting like I used to act. And when you fade, David's supposed to be off to war. He's not even supposed to be in Jerusalem. So here's what it looks like. Let's break the story down. Right in your notes, number one, yellow alert. If there are any Trekkies in the room, the new movie came out. Yellow alert, you know what that means. Yellow alert, danger, danger, danger. Get ready, something could be really dangerous. Like yellow alert, get on alert, you know. Capone was about 5 or 6 years old, my son, and we're driving along, and he's in the seat with me. We're driving, and we get to the intersection, and the light turns yellow, and I just gas it, and I go ripping through the intersection, you know, to make the light. And Capone says, Dad, Mom said green means go. And red means stop, and yellow means slow down. And in my mind, I'm thinking, boy, that's how your mom drives, son. Dad drives a little different. But have you ever caught yourself speeding up when you should be slowing down? Look at David. He's in Jerusalem. Let me read this to you. One evening, David got up from his bed and was walking around on the roof of the palace. From the roof, he saw a woman bathing. Yellow alert. Yellow alert. Slow down. I caught a job right after high school up in Alaska on a fishing boat. And on this boat, they would automatically program it. I went up one time and no one was driving the boat. And this boat is going out there. I said, hey, you know, shouldn't someone be driving the boat? It's a huge crab boat, you know. And we're going. The guy says, oh, no, we just put it on automatic pilot. It has a computer. And you just program in where you want to end up at. And then as the boat fades left or right, it just automatically course corrects. And so we did end up where we were supposed to end up because there was things that we were supposed to do there. But when you fade, just jot a note in the margin. When you fade, you can end up someplace you're not supposed to be. And you can do something you're not supposed to do. And all you did was you just sort of faded. You didn't course. Think of how far David is away from where he is supposed to be. He's not even supposed to be in Jerusalem. He's supposed to be out at battle as a king, leading troops into victory, protecting the nation. He's not supposed to be sleeping in all day, getting up out of his bed, walking around his roof, looking at some girl taking a bath. He is a long ways away from where he's supposed to be. And he's not doing what he's supposed to do. And all because you fade. It doesn't just happen, just all of a sudden. It's just one little justification at a time. The wintertime was the time to rest for David, and he could have rested, but he didn't just rest. He faded. And now he's not where he's supposed to be. He's not acting like a king. And he's not doing what he's supposed to do because he faded away. And now he's far away, very far away from where he's supposed to be. It's like I fade when I talk to my children and then pretty soon I just yell at them all the time. Or I fade in how I spend my money and then I have a huge amount of debt. Or I fade in how I keep my diet and then I hate my body. It's just a fade. I don't end up there right away. You just sort of gradually get there and all of a sudden you're like, how did I get here? And David, you know, he's very restless. And here's a tip that I've learned about going to yellow alert, you know, just like the Enterprise, yellow alert, like everybody get ready because we could be in some danger right now. Whenever I'm restless, I go to yellow alert because yellow alert means I'm not able to be satisfied. David has a beautiful wife and a ton of money. He's very popular. He has all kinds of power, and yet he can't be satisfied. He sleeps in all day long, and he gets up. He's still tired. He's wandering around dissatisfied. And I've noticed that whenever I'm dissatisfied, whenever I can't be satisfied, whenever I'm restless, go to yellow alert and ask myself the question, how far have I faded from the Lord? How far am I faded from where I'm supposed to be? How far am I faded from how I'm supposed to be acting? Because I can't be satisfied. It doesn't matter what I eat, what I do, what I watch, who I'm with. I'm restless. Of course, when you're restless, you're vulnerable. And David is. But if you go to yellow alert, if you slow down, if you ask yourself the question, how far have I faded? You can avoid so much. But if you don't, if you keep going, look, let's read the second thing, red alert. The woman was very beautiful. Red alert, red alert, red alert. So now he's up on his roof rocking around. He looks at her, he says, oh, just my type. Who knew? Very beautiful. Now here's the thing, she might have been beautiful. Maybe she was, maybe she wasn't. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But David thought she was beautiful. And here's what I've noticed about I'm going to just kind of put this in a context of men and women. So guys kind of listen up, but it can go for girls too. So here's the analogy. You got some people on an airplane, 35-year-old guy this side of the aisle sitting in a chair, 33-year-old woman in this side of the aisle sitting in a chair. They chat a little bit. They talk about absolutely no sexual sparks fly. This dude is not the least bit interested, nothing. She's like, nice guy, no emotional, not one thing goes on. Then the plane crashes, and they're swept up on an island, and nobody else is there. They're there all by themselves. They have to be together every day. They're talking, and all of a sudden, the guy's like, hey, she's got a nice butt. You know, you see that on the airplane. And then day after day, he watches her, and he watches her, and she gets a little bit more tan, and the wind starts to blow in her hair, and all of a sudden, he starts to sort of have like a but of course, he, you know, his ring's on, and he's got a family back home, but it's like she wasn't beautiful on the plane. And then all of a sudden, for the woman, he's the best conversationalist in the world. He listens to me. He likes to hear me talk. It never occurs to her that she's the only other person on the island. He likes me. And then the next thing you know, there's a beauty there that they're sharing between each other. It has nothing to do with relationship. David walking around the roof, he sees the woman in the bathtub. And she goes, whoa, that girl's beautiful. And he does not go to red alert. He doesn't stop. Listen, this is important. When it comes to relationships, healthy relationships have boundaries built in. You know why? Because it's too hard to stop without them. Boundaries that you have to keep. I didn't used to believe that. There was a time in my life I thought, me and Jesus are strong enough. And then I realized that anybody that I've ever, you can go from David in the Bible right on through to the President of the United States. And the ones that have had the huge falls sexually have always thought, I'm strong enough. The ones that don't fall are the ones who admit, I'm not strong enough. No way. I need a boundary. And David doesn't have any boundaries. And he's in trouble because now he's supposed to be stopping and he's not stopping. Did you see the chilling verse in this? Listen to this. David sent someone to find out about her. He's not stopping. He's racing towards sin now. It's way past yellow alert. There's no red alert. I mean, now David, like that, now he's investigating. It's like the guys that, you know, surfing on TV, you know, and they're surfing through the channels and they're just surfing, they're just watching, and then they go through the really erotic thing on the movie, and they always ask me, well, is that a sin if you're just surfing through the channels and you just happen to see something? I said, no, but if you stop and put it on slow motion and grab the popcorn, that's a sin, you know? It's like boundaries. And David doesn't have any. And then he sends someone to find out about her. Let me read you something. This will be up on the screens. I want to read you what happens next. He sends somebody, and the man said, "She's Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite." Then David sent messengers to get her. She came to him, and he slept with her. Now she was getting purifying herself from her monthly uncleanliness. So it's her time of the month. Then she went back home. The woman conceived, sent word to David saying, "I am pregnant." The Bible is amazing when it comes to detail. You think, Lord, can't you leave women's periods out of it? But he doesn't. He wants us to know, because of all the times to have sex, when women, it's their time of the month, after that, very fertile. And so all of a sudden they're like, "David, this is like the worst time you could have had sex with her." And do you know, in our culture, having a baby has kind of been separated from sex. Sex is just about pleasure and having fun and a good time and doing something that most of us all really, really like. And it's like, that's all sex is. But remember, sex also means having a baby. If you have sex with someone at the wrong time, now there's a child, which becomes a huge problem for David. Which, by the way, no baby is a problem, ever. It doesn't matter what kind of sex caused it. If it was good sex, bad sex, shouldn't have had sex, did have sex, doesn't matter. Children, a baby is always a blessing. And always blessed by God. Always, every time. The baby is never the problem. The child's never the problem. If you've ever met anybody that was tangled up in that lie, because that's all that is. The problem is the complication that David now has, because he thought he was just having sex, but he happened to get Bathsheba at the wrong time of the month, and now she's having a baby, and she sends word. She says, "This is an issue, man. A child is coming." And David had a chance. He had a chance right here. He had a chance before it ever started when it says that she was the daughter of Eliam and Uriah the Hittite. And here's why. When you are about to do something, and maybe you are right now, you're heading somewhere, and everybody knows it's a secret, but you're heading there. And God's trying to get through to you. He's giving you a chance. Don't go there. Stop. He comes back and he mentions these two names. These two men are soldiers in David's army, and they're a part of an elite task force called the Mighty Men. David had 30 people that had been selected, and they were the elite of they were the Navy SEALs, Rangers, whatevers. You know, they were the elite, and they were called the Mighty Men. And these two guys are part of the Mighty Men. David knows them. He knows their name. He knows their families. He should have went, "Whoa, what am I thinking? I have fought side by side those guys. We have been in the trenches together. I mean, those are my dudes." He had his chance. But he sent for her, and she came to him. And now there's a baby. It's an issue. And David, you know, the saddest part about this story is that when David is facing Goliath the giant, and he looks down, and all he has is a slingshot, and he looks up to heaven and says, "Well, God, I know you can do anything. Let's go." But when he faces this problem here, which is nothing like a giant, but then again it is, he doesn't even turn to God at all. He has faded so far away from God that he doesn't believe he can turn to God. You know why we started this church? Because there's a lot of people there. They fade so far away, just one little step at a time, one justification at a time. Pretty soon they haven't exercised in 2 months. They're way out there, and they're struggling. And then they make a decision, and the whole thing blows up, and they don't believe they can turn to the Lord. I mean, if David, the giant killer, who had such a close relationship, he has a faith, God can do anything regardless of my circumstances. He has faded so away that he doesn't think he can turn to the Lord. He's ashamed of himself. He knows he's supposed to be out to battle. I'm sure everybody in Jerusalem was like, "What the heck? How come David stayed in the city?" And everybody's like, "Shut up, man. Don't say anything about David. It's our hero, man. If he stayed in Jerusalem, he's got a good reason to be in Jerusalem." And he's probably thinking, "Whoa, when this news gets out." The saddest part about this story is that David is so far away from the Lord, he doesn't think he can turn to the Lord. So he's going to handle everything himself now. And it does not go down like the giant slaying. He gets this crazy idea to invite Uriah back to Jerusalem, and he tries to get him drunk and send him home. He's going to do the old bait and switch. Go home and have sex with your wife, and then they'll blame you for the baby. The baby looks like me. They'll just go, "Oh, he looks like King David, but it's Uriah's child." And Uriah is an honorable man. David never even, Here's the worst part about fading away from Jesus. My thinking gets so distorted. He forgets Uriah is like special forces dude. He comes home and he says, I would never go home and sleep with my wife. I'm a military man. I'm a man of duty. I would never disregard or dishonor. I would never do that. I'm not on leave. He slept at the king's door and protected him that night. Never went home. And David's like, dang. So listen to what happens next. In the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab, that's the general, and sent it with Uriah. In it he wrote, put Uriah out in front where the fighting is fiercest, then withdraw from him so he'll be struck down and die. So while Uriah had the city, or while Joab had the city under siege, he put Uriah at the place where he knew the strongest defenders were. When the men of the city came out and fought against Joab, some of the men in David's army fell. Moreover, Uriah the Hittite died. So there's the story. That's David's answer. I just kill the husband. Make it all go away. That's distorted thinking. You know how come? The baby is still coming. People are going to ask questions. And here's the thing he really forgets. God is going to ask questions. Do you know you can fade so far away from the Lord that you can live like he doesn't even exist? Not only do you not turn to him for help and comfort, you forget that he will turn to you. And David forgets all about that. He says, I have this solved. And that's pretty distorted. He never does stop. And I'm going to let you finish the story. You can go to 2 Samuel, and in the 12th chapter, you can read all about this story, what happens to David, because it gets worse way before it ever gets any better. It is not a pretty story. In the Bible, it's so honest, it tells the true story even about God's heroes, because God can handle our honesty. And it's a while before David finally turns back to God and stops the fade. And turn your notes over. I want to read you something. David's a musician, and he's a poet, and he's a singer and songwriter. And listen to how he tries to capture it in a song later. He writes a song, and he's trying to describe what happened through all of this. Create in me a clean heart, O God. Restore within me a sense of being brand new. Don't throw me far away from your presence, and do not remove your Holy Spirit from me. Give back to me the deep delight in being saved by you. Let your willing spirit sustain me. And then can we read these last two lines together? Everybody just nice and loud. If you do, I promise to teach rebels your ways and help sinners find their way back to you. He writes this song. It's like David saying, I don't want to go back there, and I don't want anybody else to go back there. I don't care if people are just fading or they're far away now. I want to help them find their way back. And we started East Lake Church to be a place where people could find their way back. We wanted to be the type of place where you could invite your friends and your family, and when someone comes here, they experience Jesus, they can see that Jesus loves them, and they could find their way back from no matter where they are. It's like David says in this song, he's saying, I was so far out there that I took another man's wife, and then I killed that man to try to make it all go away. I was so far out there that I didn't even think of turning to God. And somehow I found my way back. And so we started this church so people could find their way back. The whole thing here is so people can find their way back. And we have this diagram that we use. Let me show it to you. We call it a crowd decor ministry. And I want to talk just a little bit about East Lake and where we're going and who we are so you have an idea of it. Crowd Decor Ministry. This is East Lake Church kind of on a diagram. The community is all the people around us, all the people in our families, our friends, everybody we go to work with. That's the community. Some people go to church out there, some don't. Some people want to be with God, others are trying to figure it out. That's the community that we live in. And what we're trying to do is to grant them an invitation, build a bridge, do something that the people out there would know that they could join this crowd, that we would welcome them, they would be accepted, they wouldn't be misunderstood. They would always be welcome here because from within the crowd, you can find Jesus. That's the reason when you came today, people greeted you and welcomed you and wave to you. And that's the reason we have the funny videos and the otter pops and the juice outside. Everything is geared for the person walking in going, dang, I thought this was going to be terrible. It's not as bad as I thought. Everything is geared to create a place where people can join the crowd. Because from within the crowd, you can find Jesus. And it's a process. Once you're in the crowd, you become part of the congregation. It's like spiritual growth in your relationship with Jesus. You come and you go, wow, I think I'm going to go to church here. This is where I'm going to be now. I'm going to hang out with all these people. So you come on Sundays, and you maybe don't rearrange your schedules or anything like that. Because let's face it, when you first start going to church, if you go twice a month, you're like, whoa, I am a consistent churchgoer. And so, you know, that's you. You hang out in church, and you're here and everything like that. But at some point, you want more with Jesus. You want a closer relationship with Jesus. It's like anybody you date or marriage, you're like, well, it's just not enough to talk on the phone for 5 minutes. I'm going to talk until my battery runs completely down. And so, you know, it's like that. And so you go to a place of committed. And now you're with Jesus. You know how to follow Jesus. You can follow him through loss and hardship and hurt and demotions and promotions and with your money and with sickness. And you can move through difficult times and you have great times with Jesus. But whatever the case is, you know how to follow him. You don't get to where David is. You're like, no, I'll solve this some other way. You follow Jesus, and then there's a core. And core is just the people that they carry it. They pray. They're the people in this church that are here. They're the ones that serve. They're the ones that give. They're the ones that provide a platform for everything else to occur around us, all from the community, all the way in. It's all about having a relationship with Jesus, and that's what it looks like. If you ever wondered, why did they do church the way they do? Because we see it this way. If we can reach people out in the community, a crowd is not a church. But a crowd can become a church. And that's our ministry style. Now, there's a rhythm to the year and how we do it. And the studies have shown that in the fall, people are the most interested in God. They're the most interested in attending church. They're the most open to spiritual things in the fall. And so we target the fall as the time that we try to reach out to the community. That's the time of year that we spend as much money as we can. We save all year long, and everything is geared towards those people. We even designed the services, the talks, to be like that. Last year, we did one called Mr. and Mrs. Better Half. And so this was it right here. We mailed this out, and we had a four-week series of talks on how to be married and how to be a husband and wife, how does God see marriage, how to have sex in marriage, how to work with your kids, how to be a blended family, all of that. Because guess what? We all have problems in our relationships. It's not for people to go to church or don't go to church. And so that's the type of series you can invite people to. You can say, come on out to that. So this fall, we'll do another one. Every fall we do that. September, October, we target the community out there and say, please come. Because we understand that they're fading. We build a bridge so they can come into a crowd so they could find Jesus. It's all about that. Now, here's how we set that up, and it always happens in the summer. I want you to catch this, is that because there's a rhythm, it's not just about finding Jesus, because someone's like, well, I already found Jesus, and it's like, well, okay. It's also about following Jesus. So every summer, we focus on following, and that's what we're doing now. And I asked some of you to be here today because I didn't want you to miss it, because I want you to figure it out. It's hard to play, like have a uniform and be a part of a game and not even know what play they're running. It's hard to go to a potluck and not know what dish you're supposed to bring. Everybody brought Mexican and you brought, you know, Mormon potatoes or whatever those things are. It's like, doesn't match. And it's like, whoa. It's like, because you need to be able to sync and know what you're a part of. So we have a strategy in this church. We just don't roll in here every week and throw this stuff up and I stand up here we meant to come here. We're serious about this. Like we're putting roots down. We have a strategy to see God form a body of Christ here. We have a vision. We've already done this once before. We have 10 acres with a big building and a daycare and after school programs, and we've already done this. We came here to do it again. We already see the building on the property that everybody will drive by and they're like, dang, that's the place, that's the first place I ever went where I felt like I didn't have to be ashamed to go before God. That's the place where I finally forgave my wife. That's the place where I heard something to help me raise these little Indians I'm running around my house. It was there. And I became committed and I started to follow Jesus. I understood how he helps me with my money. I understood how to be a good worker. It all happened there. See that spot we drive by? My kids went to daycare there. It was affordable and really cool. People were there. I took them there every day. They had after-school programs. I'm not talking out of the top of my head. I've seen this occur. The place we came from did all of this. Vans running around the neighborhoods picking up children for parents that couldn't get them because they were at work. Bring them to the after-school program, tutor them, get them involved in sports and teach them. It was like, it's every day there and it's going to happen here. That's the vision. It's a serious vision. There's a strategy to it. And in this place, there's a core, and there's people that are committed. There's a congregation. It's all about following Jesus. So what we do is we take the summer, because we're strategic, and we set up the fall. You just can't have the fall roll in and not be ready for it. So we know the fall's coming. Lots of people will be interested. So we take the summer, and we get better at following Jesus. Here's the series that we're doing this summer. It's called Follow. One word. Jesus didn't come and say, be religious. He didn't come and say, get your act together. He came and said, follow me. You're going to go through so much crap in your life. I know I did. That's what Jesus said to him. He went through so much. And he said, just follow me. So we take the summer and we learn all about following Jesus. Now, I know there's a decision for some of you to make. Because I know there is. The decision is church and learning to follow Jesus, is that a regular part of my life? Or is church something I decide upon every single week based on anything else that's going on in my life? I understand that. But I'm asking for you to make a shift, to come one notch in the circles and become committed this summer and join in on this series and get prepared by learning to follow. So when the fall comes, we're ready to reach them. We're ready to reach out. And here's a way of saying it. It's the bottom line. I can follow instead of fade. Now this is Jesus talking right here. Jesus gathered the crowd and his disciples. Here's what he said. If any one of you wants to follow me, you'll have to give yourself up to God's plan. Take up your cross and do as I do. It's all very strategic with him. It's a chance to follow.